Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your doorway, so get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors online. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors.
Hey, before we begin our program tonight, I wanted to mentioned somebody that is kind of an unsung hero of our program, and some of you probably don't even know who he is, but he's the guy that wrote and sings our opening jingle. His name.
I remember him.
His name is Billy Thibodeau.
Oh, Bill Thibodeau, sure.
Yeah, and I found out today from some of his friends that he's in town.
Oh.
And so we just want to say hi to Billy. We want to thank him for the wonderful jingle that he wrote and sang so many years ago.
Absolutely.
So here's to Billy.
Here's to Billy Boy.
Okay. Hey, we have a good show lined up tonight. We have a jam-packed program. We're going to stuff a lot in here, so you're going to have to stay with us every minute. Don't leave the radio. We've got a great show lined up. I'll introduce them in just a minute, the guests, but first the crew, the guy behind the controls and the toggle switches. He's the Grand Lake Stream Sage. No, that didn't say that right, did he? He's
the sage. The scourge of Grand Lake Stream.
No, he's the sage. He's not the scourge. He's the sage.
I got all kinds of titles. Yeah.
Anyway, he's Norman F. Plord. Take a bow, Norm.
Good evening, everyone, and how are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy. I had some great fishing. I'm going to tell Bob about it.
Yeah, you were mentioning that. Oh. You know what's happening this time of the year is the curse of the brown-tailed moth caterpillar in Maine.
Oh, did you get bitten up, did you?
Oh, every year. This is my third year.
Oh, no.
They have no mercy on me.
Yeah. That's ugly stuff. Our guest, not our guest, our host tonight is a registered Maine guide. He has written some great fishing books, and he knows his way around a trout pond, Mr. Bob Lehman.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Nice to have you here.
Some good news for everybody in a short time.
Yeah, you bet. Mm-hmm. Our guest tonight, in this order, our first guest is going to be Bob Wingenick. Bob's been on our program a number of times. He used to own an archery business. He's now a spokesman for the VZ Salmon Club, a very active member. They've had some great fishing up there, Bob, both stripers and so forth.
Yeah,
and
shad are in early.
Shad, and they've got
a lot of shad.
And anyway, he's going to fill us in on that. And he'll reach us by phone, or we'll reach him by phone. Mm-hmm. Then after the 7:30 break, we'll be talking to a moose guide outfitter up in the Aroostook County, man who knows how to hunt moose. Nate Terrio is going to join us, and if you're new at moose hunting, he's going to help tell you how to get prepared for that exciting October moose hunt. So a good show lined up, and we hope you'll stay with us. Couple of other reminders. If you'd like to be on our program tonight, and we are a call-in show, we welcome your participation. The number to call is
1-800-966-1039. And you dial the whole number, even if you're local. 1-800-966-1039.
And if you didn't know, you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9, and 95.1. And I want to remind you, too, that we are now streaming live around the world. If you have friends in faraway places who would like to connect with the state of Maine and the outdoor community, have them check us out. They can listen to us in real time online at, let's see, if you want to listen, you go to www.wvomfm, I believe.
.com.
And that'll get you there if you want to listen to our program anywhere in the world.
I know a couple in Ohio that listen to us streaming live.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, Eric and Michelle.
Yes, and we say hi to Eric and Michelle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have some other loyal listeners.
We do.
New Hampshire, Massachusetts.
Yes.
We met people that when they found out that we were live streaming.
New Hampshire, we're going to mention him tonight.
Yep, you bet. Northwood Sporting Journal is Bob and my favorite publication. We want to encourage you to consider getting a subscription. You can have it delivered right to your house. And the July issue actually just came on the newsstands. There's a big old brookie. There's a happy fisherman on the cover at Moosehead Lake with a big, fat, square-tailed trout. And they're on the newsstands as well. If you want a subscription, you can call Alicia at the office at 732-4880. 732.
I bet I won't get you a subscription. You got to have the new address or they won't deliver it.
I'm going to take care of that.
You're a good man.
Don't you worry. You're a pretty little head about that.
Okay.
All right. Want to check out our website, too, at www.sportingjournal.com. We also provide digital subscriptions for all of the past issues of the journal. If you have military people overseas, you can remind them that it's available at no cost to them. They can sign up for the digital subscription online. Let's see. Before we get to our guests and the trivia question, we have Outdoor Digest brought to you by the Sporting Journal. Scudic Lake Bass Tournament. We interviewed a lady a couple of weeks ago to tell you about the tournament, but I want to remind you again, this is a pretty big purse, Bob. $2,000.
I guess probably, sure it is.
For the biggest bass caught.
Sure.
$2,000.
That's right.
So, anyway, the tournament is scheduled for July 8th and 9th. On the 8th, they're going to have a... The bass tournament is on a Saturday, which is the 9th, but on the 8th, Bob, they're going to have a cornhole tournament.
Oh.
And I think there's a $20 entry fee, but I think there's a $1,000 first prize
for cornhole champion. Yeah,
for the cornhole champion, they get a $1,000 prize.
Yeah.
And for the bass tournament, again, the first place is $2,000, second place is $1,000, and they have all kinds of other prizes and drawings. So check it out. That's at Scudic Lake. The Charity Bass Tournament takes place July 9th. You can sign up online early or you can sign up when you get there. But get there early because you got to get a place in line to rush out there to catch that bass.
So the young Thomas boy be out there?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. If he is, give us a call.
Yeah, and you know, this is for a good cause.
Yeah.
All of the proceeds go to the Maine Veterans Project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very worthwhile project, and we commend them. And this is also being sponsored in part by the Penobscot County Conservation Association.
Wow, great.
So good for them. That's a great cause.
It is.
One other thing. Oh, I think we're going to hook up with Bob Munjenik.
And we do have him.
Are you there, Bob?
I'm right here, listening anxiously.
Oh, nice to have you on board. Thank you. We appreciate you taking time to be with us, Bob. As I spoke at the earlier part of the program, I think you're an officer of the VZ Salmon Club, right?
Well, I'm the vice president, I guess, by default.
Okay. Well, that makes you a figurehead there. Bob, I thought it might be interesting for you to share with our listeners some of the fishing action that seems to be going on over there at the VZ Salmon Club. Can you tell us about it?
Well, the river is very busy right now. Right now the water is a little high, but the fishing has been outstanding along the river for a number of things, including the striped bass and some very large ones happen to be caught. One is as large as 39 inches.
Wow.
Big, yeah, that's a big striped bass. Yeah. And we watch people from our deck here at the VZ Salmon Club catch fish all day long when they're on the river. And with binoculars, we can watch them, what they're doing. And one time we saw 7 fish on at one time.
Wow.
Yeah, there are 14 or 15 people in front of the clubhouse between the club on this side of the river and also the Eddington side fishing at any one time. And that's a lot.
Oh, that's exciting. So the river flows a little too high right now to be fishing it?
Well, no, I wouldn't say a little. As a matter of fact, a boat just went by the VZ Salmon Club fishing. They're heading up to the bottom of the rips of the VZ Rapids where the dam used to be, and they're out right. I'm watching them as we speak, right out in front of the club. And so people are in their boats, and as soon as the rain stopped, now there will be people coming down, I'm sure, to fish from the shores, and primarily catching stripers right now from the shore. There's an occasional shad being caught now. The shad numbers are down a little bit, but they're still in the river.
Yeah. What kind of tackle are you using to catch the stripers with?
Well, people are using everything. I would prefer to be out there with large streamers and fly fishing myself. And there are people out there with hardware and spinning gear using things like daredevils and Rapalas and that kind of thing, and other kind of large striper lures. But we really encourage people very strongly to, if they're using hardware like that, to at least bend down the barbs on the hooks in case, in the rare case, they do hook an Atlantic salmon. Several have been hooked, And fortunately, so far that we know about, and fortunately, we watched them being released without being taken out of the water unharmed. So, but we do encourage people to use minimal number of hooks and at least bend the barbs down just in case the outside chance you hook an Atlantic salmon.
So have you had a chance to fish at all?
Myself?
Yeah.
Not as much as I'd like to.
Okay? Yeah.
I wish I could say I did a lot more.
Yeah. I think while we have you on the horn here, it might be good for you to refresh our listeners about the VZ Salmon Club. I know you're always looking for membership, right?
Always looking for membership. Right now, we're up to about 150 members. Ooh. From the all-time high of about over 300 back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And we are looking for members now. The club is open all the time for people who are members and have an access key. And the public is invited down here anytime, even without being members. And they can sit on the deck and do what we're doing right now, watching the eagles fly by and eat their lunch here, have a cup of coffee or whatever. And if a member in the club is the clubhouse, they'll bring them in and welcome them inside the clubhouse. But we'd love to have people join. We have, probably 25% of the members are actually women. Just because they like coming down to the clubhouse and having a cup of coffee or tea or sitting down and just socializing. And we have a number of clubs that use the clubhouse. We had a wedding here 2 weeks ago.
No kidding. That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a small wedding, but still, it's a great place to have birthday parties for your kids or do whatever you want to do. And we please encourage people to get onto the VZSalmonClub.org website and do what you can to support the club. And we'd love to have more members. We're looking for people who want to work a little bit. We have a number of details to use. We like people to help with the building and ground just for the maintenance and activities and membership list maintenance and a lot of activities that we need more help with, let's put it that way. But the social aspects of the club, fly tying, et cetera, is just a phenomenal opportunity. And we have a number of fishing rods here, both spinning and fly rods, that we will either loan to people for no cost if they want to use it in front of the club, or in some cases we actually give fishing rods away.
And I also understand there's a little extra social activity that goes on that begins with a C called cribbage. Is that still happening up there?
Oh, I'm looking at the cribbage. The cribbage board is right inside the clubhouse right now, and it's the same one that's been here for 40 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting.
And we do want more people to come down and play cribbage. The cribbage table is well-worn and well-used, and please do come down. And if you wanted to have any other activities here, we're more than happy to make the clubhouse available to the public.
One thing, if I may.
Yeah, go.
Probably one of the hottest flies you could use, and I've learned this years ago from several veterans that fish for stripers, was a 4X long shag hook and a black marabou wing and orange body. Of course, it probably is a replica to the Elvis,
yeah,
which they're really after.
Yeah,
and
right.
it's a killer, Bob. It's a killer. There's no question about it.
It is.
Probably I shouldn't tell you about it. It was that bad. No kidding. It's really a wonderful fly, and I think you'll be absolutely shaken up by it when you fish with it.
All right.
It's that bad. Like a charm.
Yeah. It is.
If somebody listening wants to join your club, how do they do that, Bob?
Well, they can get on the website, VZSalmonClub.org, and it's a membership link right there. They can come to the clubhouse. There's applications outside the clubhouse on the wall. They can take those. They can show up at the clubhouse anytime, usually the fourth Thursday of the month, for one of our membership meetings, or anytime this club's open, they can be welcome. But the easiest way is get on the website.
Okay. Would it be kosher for somebody who's not a member just to stroll over one day with a fly rod and check it out and actually fit?
Oh, they don't even have to be a member. Anybody can fish here. Please come on by.
Oh, anybody's welcome to fish the shore down there. Huh?
Absolutely. We want people to fish the shore.
Oh, that's
right
great.
Now it's a little bit high, but when the water drops a couple more feet,
yeah,
it'll be good fishing again.
Yeah.
And people catch smallmouth bass out front and stripers and shad for sure.
Yeah. If the salmon ever came back to the extent where it was legal to fish for them, I imagine there would be a huge increase in your membership, like overnight, right?
Oh, no doubt about it. When the feds, in their irresponsible actions, in my opinion, made it endangered, it really hurt the club memberships on the river, because there used to be 1,200 members in the three clubs in the lower river.
Wow.
And that dropped down to less than 150 between the three clubs after the salmon got listed, because people thought they couldn't fish anymore. Now the salmon returns on the river this year. As of last Thursday night, was just shy of 1,200, which is the highest it's been for that date in the past 12 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So good. Yeah.
Today, I'm sure it's well over 1,200 as of today, and we'll get updates every Monday.
At high water, probably.
Yeah. Is your organization still actively lobbying to try to get some kind of limited recreational fishing of Atlantic salmon there in the river?
Well, we're constantly, that's our goal, to ring the bell again out in front of the club when a salmon is on. And as long as the salmon is listed as endangered, the feds will not let us have a catch and release fishery. When it goes to threatened, they can allow a catch and release fishery. And they're working various strategies right now to get the wild Atlantic salmon numbers up to a threshold, which seems to be elusive right now, in my opinion, to get to the point where they can say, okay, we can go to threatened now rather than endangered and allow a catch and release fishery. And just so you know, people can fish in front of the club for stripers with a fly, bend the barb down, and if you hook an Atlantic salmon, you just cannot take it out of the water and you cannot harm it by accident while fishing for stripers or shad or something. So if people can fish in front of the river, they can fish. And if they hook a salmon, just be very, very careful with it. Let it get rid of it. Get it off the hook as soon as you can.
Yeah. All right. Hey, this has been great. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and we encourage anybody who's listening to look into your club. You're a great organization, and kudos to you, Bob, and the other fellows who have helped build us up to what it should be. And we'll keep an eye on it and talk to you again sometime.
I appreciate that. You guys have a great night.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care,
Bob.
Lines. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Bye-bye. All right, that was Bob Wunjenik, who's vice president of the BC Salmon Club. Sounds like the things are beginning to cook over there, huh?
Well, I should say so. They're really heating up, aren't they?
Yeah.
High water, though, has got to be bringing a lot of migrators in.
I would think so,
all those species.
You bet. Mm. Okay, I think it's time to bring in Bob's band.
I'm the big boss bass, and you work for me. This is my rock.
Hey, you missed out on the yeah.
I'm on the air.
The yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I've been off a couple of weeks, as you know. Oh. And I'm getting forgetful in my old age, too, I guess.
Oh, aren't we all? What's going on in the fishing world, Bob?
Well, the biggest thing, I think, was Norm and I went up to Rangeley and had a great old time selling books and giving away flies and so forth. And we met a lady up there who was running the place, and she did a wonderful job. Her name was Sue, and I forget her last name, but she apparently runs the Ranger Region Fly Shop up there. It used to be the Fletcher's. And we also stopped by there and said hello. And Sue is quite the lady. She really is. And we were so pleased to meet her. And did you talk to her on the phone?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
She's nice. Yeah. And another thing I want to mention was I get to mention Stefan. Stefan is quite a guy. He's a waiter out to the home on Ohio Street, and he's a peach. So good evening, Stefan, and we're going to give you a little gift on the air before long and something in the mail.
Oh, that's great.
And also, let us also talk about a good friend of mine I met up to Rangeley, and I also met him down to the Eldridge Brothers show down to Cape Natick, and that, of course, was Scott Byron. Great young man, very personable. He sat right behind us, Norm and I, and tying flies, and he's a peach, and I guess he's going to start writing for the Journal.
I think he's in this month,
He's in this month,
Well,
there you are.
Yeah.
Okay, so hello to you, my boy. Nice to hear from you today in the phone. We talked, and I'll be reading your column in the Journal.
You will, for sure.
Yep. And next, I think, on the agenda is we want to interview you, Paul, if we got time, on your trip to the West Branch of the...
Okay, we'll keep it fairly brief. What would you like to know?
Well, what do you got? I'm kidding. Well, we heard the water was high in the river. And you left the river and went up to some pond, and you made out like a bandit.
Well,
right?
the West Branch is always an exciting place, except the salmon there are very well schooled, and I think they all have doctoral degrees in tippet avoidance. But yeah. They're there. You just got a challenge to catch them. But I left that place feeling a little left out, not having caught anything but a 7-inch brookie.
Yeah.
But I went up into my favorite secret pond up in Roostook County, up north.
Yes,
there. And I went alone. This is the first time in my many years that I've been in the woods a lot.
Yeah.
But the first time I've ever gone anywhere alone for 4 days.
Yeah.
And I had a blast.
Wonderful.
Great. I realized that I'm pretty good company, Norm.
That's good.
You know? I had a good time.
You and the mosquitoes, right?
Yeah. But anyway, the bottom line is I hit the trout, Bob. I can't tell you where I went. This is not a fish story. I have no witnesses, but I hit the trout.
Well, you also had a hatch.
I had a hatch. I had, every day, Bob. Not just at sunset, but I'm talking about 10 o'clock in the morning.
Throughout the day.
Or
yeah,
2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
Oh, man. It was
all alone.
All alone, yeah. And I just had a wonderful time. And Diane was concerned about me being up there at my advanced age, you know, wrestling canoes and all that. But I managed to find some folks up there to give me a hand.
Mm-hmm.
And Scotty loaned me his personal locator beacon. So if I had an emergency, I could press a button and search and rescue would come and save me.
There you are.
But anyway, didn't need anybody. And the one thing I want to impart to you is that this fellow I ran into who listens to our show knew who I was by the sign of my truck.
Really?
And he gave me a fly, and I almost laughed in his face when he gave it to me.
Yeah.
This thing was a number 12 mosquito.
I mean, come on. You know how big a number 12 hook is?
It probably weighs 2 pounds.
It's a big fly.
And my little 5-weight, I had all I could do to get it out there. But once I got it on the dimple, man, they loved it.
Wow.
They loved it. I couldn't believe it. I've always used like 14s and 16s.
Oh, yeah, on a mosquito pattern, absolutely.
Oh,
you know.
This thing was a killer. You got to tie some of those up.
Well, I guess so.
Oh. They were deadly.
Did you have one with you, apparently? Somebody gave you one.
By the end of the 3 days, it was all chewed to pieces. You know what happened.
Oh, yeah. It's
all chewed to bits. Anyway, I had a great trip.
That's wonderful.
I want to tell everybody that the fishing is pretty hot. I think with all the cloudy weather we're having, it's going to continue.
Oh, yeah, that's
this
right.
is the time to go trout fishing right now, folks.
It sure is. Yeah. I guess Scotty did pretty good, they tell me.
Scotty did okay.
Scotty always does well.
He's he's a good fisherman.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, I guess that's pretty well wrap it up, although I did want to mention a fellow by the name of Dan from Gardner, and he witnessed a bunch of, he says sturgeons spawning, I guess they were spawning in...
Coppicey Stream.
Yeah, that's right.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, and it was quite a show they put on for a while down there. And people are witnessing a spectacular event as hundreds and thousands of sturgeon spawned near downtown.
Yeah, hard to believe.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yep. Okay, we're going to try to move this thing along here. We're going to have a guest after 7:30 break. A quick trivia question. We want you to answer this as quickly as you can. I'm going to read it to you. We're going to give you one of Bob's famous streamer flies if you know the answer to this question. What is the difference between a bass tournament and a bass derby? And the number is
1-800-966-1039.
You ponder that. We'll be right back. Okay, we're looking for an answer to the trivia question. We want you to tell us what the difference is between a bass tournament and a bass derby. And we have a caller standing by. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Good evening.
And what's your first name, sir?
My name is Ted. T-E-D, Ted.
Okay, Ted, what do you think the answer is, Ted?
Well, in a tournament, the fish are kept alive and released. In a derby, they're not.
Bingo.
That is absolutely correct, sir.
Very good.
Good job. Right.
And a very clear...
He must be in a tournament at times.
Yeah.
Know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Are you a tournament bass fisherman, Ted?
I wish.
You wish. Okay. Well, you had the right answer. I don't know how you found that, but it's excellent. You've won one of Bob's famous streamer flies.
Well, thank you. I listen to your show, and I listen to the young lady the other week describing the difference between the derby in the tournament.
There you go. You're a keen listener. That's great. You heard the answer on this program. That's excellent.
Yes, I did.
Where are you calling from, Ted?
Amity.
Oh, Amity, yeah. Up there in the county.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Amityville.
Yeah.
And not Amityville.
I know what that is. Well, near Amityville.
And the potato, the potatoes are beginning. I was up in that country there just last few days. The potatoes are peaking up pretty good up there through the rows, huh?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, good. Good. I hope you have a good growing season. Well, thank you, Ted. If you'll stay on the line, Norm's going to get your address, and Bob will send you out one of his streamer flies. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
I certainly will.
All right.
Thank you. In the mail tomorrow.
All right. Thank you, Ted. Stay on the line, sir. All right. That was the correct answer. The bass tournament. You got to keep them alive well and then put them back in the lake. But a derby, you can kill them and eat them or whatever you
want. I don't think many people do, though. Very few kill them.
No, probably not.
You ever eat one?
I like bass, young bass.
Yeah, the fillets aren't too bad. They're kind of a sweet meat.
Yeah, I don't mind
them. Get the bones out of there, all right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, we're going to be hooking up in a few minutes with Nate Terrio. Nate runs, I think it's OMM Outfitters up in Eagle Lake.
Mm-hmm.
He's a well-respected moose guide,
mm-hmm.
knows his stuff,
yeah.
and his clients get some big critters, Bob. I mean...
They do. He knows his stuff.
Yeah,
huh?
He knows his stuff.
Knows where to go and what to get.
Yeah,
get him.
And he does his homework.
Yeah.
He spends the whole year
just
scouting.
Scouting, yeah.
And, you know, that's half the battle, if you know
sure
where those
is,
critters are.
Just like fishing.
Yeah, know what their habits. Yeah, know what their habits are, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
right, and the spots.
Yeah,
they know the spots.
Yeah, and Nate knows his stuff. So I thought it might be edifying for him to tell some of our listeners who may have just gotten their first moose permit how to go about hiring a guide and how to make plans.
And we probably should be doing the half hour commercial. So back to back commercial, I'm afraid.
Oh, back to back commercial. That's because we didn't. We drag things out.
Okay.
Well, sorry about that, Mr. Engineer. Let's take a commercial, and then you can connect with Nate, and we'll be talking to him.
All right.
We'll be right. Have patience, folks. We'll be right back. Thank you. Okay. We are back with Maine Outdoors. We hope you're still with us. And again, if you want to talk with us, if you have a question for our guests who we're about to connect up with, the number to call is what, Bob?
1-800-966-1039.
And our next guest standing by from Aroostook County is the honcho up there at OMM Outfitters. I think, do I have that right, Nate?
Yeah, honcho. Yeah, you got it, Paul. Thank you. Well, it's great to be on the show again, and I appreciate being here. And I'm also I'm sitting here with our team leader, Ken Mayo. Him and I started OMM. This is our 20th season.
Wow, you guys have been at it a while. Yeah, great.
Yeah, Kent, you just happen to be up here, and I believe you guys know each other from way back down in Bangor area.
What's his name?
Ken Mayo. Remember me, Paul?
Oh, Ken, sure. Wow, you go way back. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I didn't realize you guys were hooked up together. That's great. Good to hear your voice, Ken. Been a long time. And
yeah,
also,
some college aspirations turned, dreams and goals coming true, I guess.
You bet. Nate, in the studio as well, I have our co-host Bob Lehman is also here. He may have some questions for you. Let's start out, Nate. I know, as I mentioned to others before we hooked up with you, you're a highly respected moose outfitter guide. You get some big critters before the season's out. And obviously, you know your stuff, and I know you devote a lot of your time to scouting, which probably is half the battle. But for the benefit of those who may have their first moose permit, and there are 4,000 out there, what suggestions or tips might you have for those folks?
Yeah, first, congratulations to everyone that was successful in the draw. Just that in itself is quite a feat. And, I guess from our tenure of doing this, some of the questions that we respect and appreciate hearing from our prospects, would be, I would say, number one, and this is something that I would do when vetting an outfitter, is to ask for a successful and unsuccessful hunt from the previous year. So a reference that would be successful and also one that would be unsuccessful from the previous year.
Not sure I understand it. You're saying that if I were thinking about signing up with you, that I should ask you to give me a contact, a name and a of a hunter who was unsuccessful?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, one that was unsuccessful, if they have it, and then one that was successful.
So why would you want me to talk to one who's not successful? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, you know, if somebody that is unsuccessful still had a great hunt.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's a success.
Oh, yeah, that makes
sense. Outfitter, you know, because reality is, you know, not everybody is going to be successful. And when they can leave feeling that they've had a great experience, a great time in the woods, that the staff worked hard, the accommodations were good, the food was good, and they leave without having a complaint, and they tell you, please use me as an unsuccessful reference for the next year. After doing this for 20 years, it probably means the most to us.
Yeah. You know, that's really kind of refreshing. I had never heard of that approach, but I like it. I think it makes a lot of sense. Because, you know, hunting is hunting. It's not killing, it's hunting. And you don't always score when you hunt. We all know that, and that's part of the reality of it. And I think that's a great idea. In other words, if somebody can say they had a good time, even though they didn't fill their tag, that means that you folks were doing your work, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and then I would say some of the other, you know, questions would be, you know, how many people are going to be in camp? What is the guide's duties for the week? You know, do they leave after they harvest? Do they stay on and help out as a team to help everyone be successful? You know, what's a day-to-day hunt look like? You know, so, you know, start from getting up in the morning and getting out there, and, you know, what does that look like?
In your extraction process of your animal, as we've seen the last couple of seasons here, the September season has been unusually warm, and that comes to play with your meat if you are successful. So as a client, you want to be able to ensure that your outfitter has your best interest with that meat, regardless of what it is, whether you're going to trailer it to a butcher or you have some other preparations made. What's the goal once that animal's down?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and we instituted a tape and quarter policy about, six years ago. And we also have a state inspected processing facility. We processed 75 moose last year. And, you know, Paul, going into this, you know, in the past, you know, people would be like, oh, you know, the meat was tough, big mature bull. And over the last 6 years, you know, people started to say the meat was fantastic. And it didn't really cross our mind at first. But then we realized when you get the hide off that animal right away, no matter what the temperature is, the chances of that meat tasting and being tender is much better.
Yeah, you mentioned the word, I missed that. You mentioned some kind of a policy. What was the policy again?
A cape and quarter policy. So,
oh, I get it. Yeah.
Even if we, you know, say the animal, we call the animal out to a, you know, a dirt road edge, and it, or sometimes they run to a road. No matter if we could back a truck to it, it's caped and quartered right there in the field.
Oh, no kidding! Do you do that with all of your kills? You do that.
Every one of them.
In other words, you never take a whole moose to the tagging station.
No, if people ask us what the weight were, we wouldn't know what to say.
Yeah.
We can guesstimate it.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, it's a real pity when somebody takes the effort, spends the money, and does the work to get a moose, and then have the moose meat be just mediocre because they didn't take care of it. Good for you.
I would say, you know, some of the other vetting processes would be, you know, asking the outfitter what are their scouting methods, how they go about doing it, when they do it, you know, what they have for equipment, how they use that equipment. I think another thing would be, you know, is this something they do full time? you know, what is, you know, is this your full-time operation? And then, you know, do you live in the zones that you outfit in or the area that you outfit in, you know, if we're speaking of outside of the state of Maine?
How many, you have a reputation for being a really dedicated scouter. You do a lot of homework, Nate, and obviously that's why you find the big critters. How much time do you actually spend before and after the hunt in the scouting process?
You know, we do a lot of aerial surveying. We probably did about 40 hours in December of aerial surveys. We have a 2005 Aviat Husky bush plane, and we find in December they're in their home areas, and they still have their antlers. So we'll follow them and kind of learn their methods. And then from probably about the end of December to right around February, you know, we're on snowshoes. We're actually, you know, tracking them once we've seen they've cast their antlers or shed their antlers. And we're trying to collect the match sets of these bulls that we follow. And then there's probably, I would say, from, you know, mid-February to I'd probably say end of April, early May, we're on foot again. We're setting trail cameras. You know, we're getting back into these places. And then there's another dry spell. You know, we try to stay out of there, try not to pressure them. And then we really start to get back into it. You know, we pick up intel, you know, from our bear bait territory, you know, in one of those zones. And then we do, you know, little scouting missions here and there in some of the other zones that we're operating in. But then we really start to get back into it pretty heavily around, you know, the 1st of September. You know, the bulls are, first week in September, the bulls are starting to mark their territories out, you know, so we're looking for rakings and, you know, we're trying to identify our target bulls in those areas from, you know, tracks, trail cameras, and also we're trying to understand what type of competition that bull has in the area. Some of the satellite bulls that are maybe, you know, starting to become a little more aggressive, you know, and that's going to really help us to understand how we're going to approach the animal during the hunt, you know, how aggressive we might be. And then, you know, other than that, it just comes down to understanding where he lives and then how to get into those places and making sure everything's right, the wind's right, and, you know.
Nate, this must be a yearly occupation for Nate. Is that true?
You know, and it's not just me. You know, our full-time guy, Bryce Morrison, you know, we have a 600 millimeter lens that we take pictures of the bulls out of the plane. You know, and then the team, you know, the guys are up here throughout the summer, you know, setting cameras, checking cameras. We're going over, aerial imagery, looking at new technology that is constantly coming out. I'm just trying to keep up on that as a thing in itself. And then, you know, we have a guide training program. So we're just always constantly, you know, preparing and, you know, getting things ready. I mean, the reality is people, you know, they put in for a long time to just acquire the tag. You know, they're spending a lot of money. And, you know, we just want to make sure that we've done everything that we possibly can to ensure a world-class experience in the field and also be able to educate the people that are with us on what we're doing and how we're doing it, just to try to keep them in the game. So, I mean, yeah, I've never really kept track of the hours. It's a lot, but you don't really think about it when you're out there because it's just fun.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a very scientific operation going there, and I imagine you probably maintain a database with these different critters. You probably give them names and numbers. I'm just guessing.
Most guys, it was, you know, did it on a lot, like a part-time basis.
Well, a lot of them do, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nate, we're going to have to take a short profit break here, but I'd like to ask you and Ken to hang on there, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
All right. And you folks at home, don't be bashful. If you have a question for Nate or Ken, we encourage you to call. We don't bite. 1-800-966-1039. Norm will be standing by. He loves to answer that telephone. It kind of breaks it up for him, too. And he'll be very affable when he answers your call. And we invite you to participate in our show tonight. If you are, particularly if you're a holder of a moose permit for 2024, we'd love to hear from you. And we'd like to know what some of your questions are. We can let Ken or Nate feel those questions. 1-800-966-1039. So if you have a question, feel free to call us. And now Bob's going to tell us about General Appliance and Brewer.
I certainly am. By the way, I had a friend that I know. His whole family got moose permits this year.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. That's highly unusual.
Wow.
Anyway, let's talk about General Appliance in Brewer. And they're the off-grid, I like that, living off-grid made easy at General Appliance in Brewer. And that is, of course, with gas ranges, gas refrigerators and freezers, gas lights and composting toilets.
Hold on. Ride the wave, baby.
Thank you, Norman. And this is, of course, owned and operated now by Gary Coleman. Been a serviceman at the General Appliance in Brewer for 45 years.
Yes, he has.
35 years.
Yeah,
35. Well, that's a pretty good lifetime right there.
Yeah.
It sure is. And nothing has changed. Everything's the same, just a new location up the street. And two doors up, you can't miss them. They sell appliances as well, and the number to call is 989-374-3714. So be sure and stop in and say hello.
That's right. And it's great to see. We thought the thing was going to fold up. It's great to see somebody like Gary take over the business, keep the ball rolling. And he's been repairing those appliances for many years. So
yes.
He knows what he's doing. So we encourage you to patronize them, as we all do here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, are you still there, Nate?
Yep, we're still here.
Okay, our phone lines are lighting up here. So I think we're probably going to have some folks who may have some questions for you or Ken. We have a caller. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Moose Guides Nate Terrio and Ken Mayo. Go ahead.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. My name is Ben, and me and my fiance are driving to Bar Harbor, and we stumbled upon this station, and we heard there's a moose expert. So I just have to ask the question. Who do you think would win in a fight, a bear or a moose?
Yeah, why not? That's a good question. What do you say to that, Nate?
Because, I'm
probably going to give it to the bear. There's a lot of variables in there, but they got some pretty sharp teeth and claws.
Mm. Yeah, but, like, moose have those really powerful antlers, and I've seen videos of, like, wolves who won't take down a moose. So I feel like the moose has a shot here.
In the state of Maine, a bull moose will have a shot on a black bear. We'll put it that way. If you go somewhere else where you have grizzlies or out in Alberta or whatnot, and some of the bigger black bears, the more aggressive ones, I would tend to say the grizzlies are probably going to win that battle even still. I'd like to see the fight.
Okay. So,
we're going with the bear on this one, right?
We'll go with the bear.
They're going to go with the bear, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the question, Ben. Be careful.
I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the call, and have a good time at Bar Harbor. All right. Okay, Nate, I have a question to ask you, Nate. You mentioned, people calling up and so-called vetting a prospective moose guide. I'd like to turn that around and say and ask you, when Joe Doe calls you and is curious about maybe hiring you to guide him for his new first moose permit, do you vet the prospective client?
Yeah, I mean, in talks, absolutely. You're trying to understand what their goals are. You want to understand what their physical abilities are, what their personality is like. You know, for us, it's important to pair our guides with the right client, so that you have a week in the woods with somebody that you connect with, and it's going to help the overall experience. So it's something I don't think about it too much, during the booking process, because it's just like natural at this point to just take all that in, and I'm taking notes and And then as we progress further, you know, that, you know, Kenny gets those notes and then he starts to work with, you know, we decide which guide's going to take what client, and then we go through those notes and then educate the guide, and then they reach out and, you know, with a call and, you know, create a relationship with the client.
Okay. We have another caller who may have a question. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Ken Terrio and Ken, with Nate Terrio and Ken Mayo. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm going to ask my question, and I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
Okay.
But I'm a brand-new licensed guide, and I'm booking a hunt with a client in September. And I was wondering if you had any advice for a brand-new guide. And I'll give you a little background. I've guided a whole bunch of family and friends, but never done it for money, and it's my first venture at it. So any advice would be wonderful. Thank you, and I'll hang up.
Oh, fantastic question. I love it. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations on becoming a guide and getting your first client. It's a great opportunity to get to know somebody in the field. I mean, I guess I would just say, you know, to help yourself, you know, being confident is going to be the number one key to having a good time. It, you know, having a client adds another level of, I guess, stress, if you would. And, you know, as time goes on, you'll learn how to mitigate that kind of stress. Like, you know, if you already know a lot about the animal, that's going to help to, you know, take some of the pressure off you. You know, as you learn, I mean, it's you know, as a guide, you're an expert in the woods, with the woods, you're an expert with the animal, and you're actually, you know, kind of a psychologist, you know, so you kind of learn how to, I guess, you do a lot of temperature checks with the clients, you know, but, you know, having everything, you know, scouting is awesome. You know, if you put a lot of time and effort into that and you're confident you can create a good overall experience. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot goes into the experience, the lodging, the food, you know, making sure everything's done. Cleanliness is very important, especially since, you know, we're after, you know, coming out of COVID, you know, it's really important to people. You know, clean vehicles, clean, you know, taking care of the animal in a very clean way, professional way, you know, that's all going to come back as real positive comments after the hunt. So, you know, I guess I would say that. Now, the other thing is, you know, we have a podcast called the Moose Hunt Podcast, and, you know, we really just want to educate people. We want everyone to be successful, guides, hunters, whoever it is, if it's a DIY. And it's found on any platform if you're in the podcast, and it's just, you know, we highlight the team members. Chris Richards, he's one of our managers. He's a great host, and it's an awesome opportunity to, you know, learn and listen. And we talk about clients. We talk about some of the challenges that we've had.
Sorry, Nate. You know, Nate, we are up against the clock. And
yeah,
so thank you.
Anyway,
thank you and Ken for being with us. We appreciate it. We'll have you on again sometime.
Sounds great.
See you later. Thank you, guys. All right, next week we'll be talking to Larry Balcham from Operation Puckerbrush, and we'll see you all next week right here on
Maine Outdoors.